All right. My name is Anna Pagano, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher at University of California, Berkeley, and at the Prevention Research Center. And the postdoc is funded through an IAAA T32 postdoctoral training program, so I want to give them their props. So the title of this presentation is Latino Immigrants' Barriers to Accessing Treatment for Substance Abuse Disorders in Northern California. And this is a pilot study that I've just begun as part of my postdoctoral program of study. And I think it's relevant to mention, I have no financial interest to disclose, but the way that I came to be interested in this topic is that I've worked in a community clinic for day laborers for the last year and a half in Oakland. And so I started getting a lot of patients. I'm a volunteer community health worker. I started getting a lot of patients with drug and alcohol addiction issues. And we quickly realized that there were very few places to refer them. And so then I started learning about this alternative strategy that a lot of the immigrants, especially undocumented ones, have come up with. So that's what I'm going to present today. So the objectives of this study were to learn more about treatment options available to Latino immigrants with substance use disorders, or SUDs, in Northern California, and to learn more about treatment access barriers for this population. And Latino can mean a lot of different things, and for this, the sample for the study is primarily Mexicans and Central Americans. Okay, so between February and October of this year, I carried out key informant interviews with 9 directors at 8 Latino-serving treatment programs in 4 Northern California cities. I attempted to interview directors of all Spanish-language residential treatment programs in each city, and the universe was 11, very small, but 2 of those directors in the first city declined to participate. I'm still working on them. data collection methods included semi-structured interviewing and participant observation at 6 residential SUD treatment programs. 2 of the interviews were conducted off-premises. Informed consent was obtained from all participants prior to interviewing or observation, and I conducted 5 of the interviews in English and the other 4 in Spanish, and they lasted between 90 and 210 minutes each. And qualitative data, qualitative data from field notes and interview transcripts were analyzed thematically using QDA Miner software. Should I keep going? Yeah? Okay. All right. So I'm going to kind of skip over the lit review in the interest of time. I think that Nolan actually covered many of the sources that I was going to cover quite well. So, all right. So here is a description of the programs that were included in the sample. And so programs 1 through 4 are informal Spanish language recovery programs located in City 1. They're all within a 5-mile radius of one another, and they occupy a district where thousands of Mexican and Central American immigrants have settled over the last few decades. Each program has a capacity of between 15 and 25 residents, and all were filled to capacity with a waiting list, an informal waiting list at the time of our interviews. Programs 1 and 2 accept only men, and programs 3 and 4 accept mostly men, but at the time of our interview, they had started bringing in a few women, but they kept them in a separate part of the house. And these programs are called 24 horas, or 24 hours. They're also sometimes called anexos, or like annexes. And they're modeled on a residential treatment modality that's popular in Mexico. The 24 horas all utilize Alcoholics Anonymous literature, even though everyone I interviewed, all except for one, had drug addiction as well as alcohol abuse issues. And inside the programs, they have daily and nightly meetings for residents and for members of other 24 horas, as well as what they call traditional Spanish language AA groups in the area. So the traditional ones are more of what we're used to hearing about, groups that have maybe one meeting once a week, okay, but they're not residential. And so the 24 horas are not formally registered with Alcoholics Anonymous, And unlike the anexos in Mexico and Central America, the programs modeled after them in City 1 allow residents to leave the premises during the day for work. Actually, they have to work because the residents have to help maintain their recovery houses. And typically, each resident has to pay between $60 and $70 per week. And that includes room and board and access to all the meetings and literature, AA literature. Okay, and programs 1 and 4 share a kinship that's traced back to one Salvadoran immigrant, who I'm calling Miguel, who's a recovering drug addict. When he came to the U.S. 30 years ago, he initially settled in Los Angeles, then moved to Northern California 15 years later with a friend from his AA group. And Miguel told me he was motivated to create the first 24 horas in the study due to the lack of residential treatment options for undocumented, limited English proficiency immigrants like himself. AA group attendance was sufficient for functional addicts, he said. But for those who had already lost everything, they needed to be in a residential program. So after Miguel and his friend established that first program, they moved to City 1 and founded Program 1 of the study in 1998, Program 2 in 99. And Programs 3 and 4 were then founded by graduates of Program 1 and 2 in 2003 and 2009, respectively. And so the other programs on here, Programs 5 and 8 are both Christian recovery programs. They accept about 5 to 10 or 15 men at a time, men only. They're Spanish language, like the rest of them, and they're funded through the church. And then program number 6, I interviewed 2 directors there, actually. One was treatment director and one was a house director. They use, they're county funded. They have a capacity of, they have 12 beds. And they use cognitive behavioral therapy and 12-step facilitation methods. And then number 7 is a modified therapeutic community, also county funded, the only one of the sample that accepts women, partly because they have a much bigger capacity. They have 59 beds. Okay, and here, this is a description of the interviewees, with the pseudonyms, with whether their immigration, what their immigration status is. How they identified their own ethnicity. And their qualifications, IR stands for in recovery. So in the informal programs, it was sufficient for someone to be in recovery, to have a certain amount of clean time. And the amount of clean time for those directors varied from 3 to 35 years. And the programs 5 and 8, the directors were in recovery, but also had training through their church, and there was an established curriculum that they followed with the spiritual 12 steps and biblical study. And program 6 and 7, the men, those directors, they were in recovery, and they were registered addiction specialists with the state, and they had completed a course of training through the Brining Institute. And Rachel was the only, the modified therapeutic community director, was the only one who had a master's level education in addiction counseling, and she was also the only one who did not identify as Latino in the study, as Latina. And, let's go. So there were several themes that I identified in the analysis, but I'm going to focus on the legal barriers since that's the topic of our panel. So all of the program directors interviewed cited fear of deportation as a leading treatment access barrier for undocumented Latino immigrants. The directors of programs 1 through 4 articulated this fear above all, since 3 of them are undocumented. When asked during interviews whether undocumented immigrants could access the few local county-funded Spanish language residential treatment programs available in the area, 6 of the program directors replied no. These were the directors of the 24 Horas and the Christian Recovery Programs. 2 of the 24 Horas directors commented that undocumented immigrants are even more vulnerable to possible deportation because they're doubly stigmatized. Okay, and I'll let you look at that, so I can go a little quickly here. Okay. And according to Roberto from Program 5, undocumented immigrants are sometimes even reluctant to enter his faith-based program, despite the fact that it has no connection with the government. Another fear commonly expressed by 24 Horas directors was that their programs would be shut down for violating zoning requirements. Juan pointed out that the men in his program were living in a commercial space without permission, and both he and another treatment director, program director, related, you know, episodes of panic when the fire department comes and does an inspection. But they related sort of a mixture of fear and also the idea that, well, we've been around for a while and no one's done anything, so the police know, they must know about us, they must know what we do. They display, you know, this, their symbol in the windows and the doors, and so it's, there's no secret about what they're doing. This picture I just took from the internet, that's from a 24 Horas in Mexico, so I didn't want to compromise the identity of the, the programs. But, yeah, let's see. And so here you see this theme of illegality again. This is from Jorge from Program 2. And he told of a recent time in the late 90s and early 2000s when the programs were actually persecuted by police. He was the only one that told me about that. The others didn't mention that at all. And he was the last program director that I had interviewed. So let me skip ahead a little bit. Okay, so the two directors of the formal programs, Program 6 and 7, reported that they had no problem accepting undocumented immigrants. Okay, so what we have here is a substantial miscommunication. Okay. Rachel said she and her program staff have helped many clients obtain green cards. I don't know how, but she said that. And public services for which they did not technically qualify. Also, Marcos and Julio, the directors of Program 6, said immigration status is not an issue. All they need to know is to be able to read and speak Spanish, said Marcos. And Julio said, here, that's Rachel. Okay. I get why other programs want to have documented clients, because they can get money. They have more money that is going through their social security numbers and all that. I get it, but we're looking for who's going to be willing to help with what we're working with. They got nowhere else to go. Okay, and also Roberto and Leon, the directors of faith-based programs 5 and 8, also stated that they have no problem accepting undocumented immigrants. And both also reported having helped their residents obtain documentation and access to social services. Okay, so this pilot study found that in response to perceived legal barriers, undocumented Latino immigrants in Northern California have created a parallel addiction recovery infrastructure that better serves their needs. Not only are residents assured that their undocumented status will not affect their access to the programs, but the programs are also offered in their native language by fellow immigrants and former addicts with whom they can more easily identify than some of the county programs. The treatment modality is also familiar to the primarily Mexican and Central American residents of these 24 Horas, since they're modeled upon those programs in the places where they come from and even utilize the same logo and the same AA materials. The study also identified a substantial source of miscommunication between directors of informal versus formal programs regarding undocumented immigrants' eligibility for government funding treatment. The divide in interviewees' perspectives suggests the extent to which undocumented immigrants are often isolated from mainstream channels of information and thus from knowledge of public services that are available to them. And this is California. I know the situation is very different in other parts of the country. This pilot study's preliminary findings point to a significant need for treatment providers to disseminate information about service eligibility to undocumented immigrants. This could be accomplished through outreach efforts at strategic locations such as community clinics, ERs, and day laborer hiring zones. Okay. Increased funding for Spanish language treatment programs in areas with many Latino immigrants is also necessary to meet the growing demand for services. Finally, improved articulation between ERs, community clinics, and SUD treatment programs would help to address gaps in care that occur between substance use-related doctor visits and SUD treatment referrals. Thank you.